This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 18th of October, 1954. The title of this lecture is Route 1, Step 12. This tape is 15 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I want to continue some of this material on Route 1. We've been going over this material on Route 1, and we have covered a great deal about exteriorization. Now, everything I've covered with you at this time is Route 1, Step 4, to Route 1, Step 11. Now, we get into a more doubtful area of Route 1 when we get into Route 1, 12. I want you to understand clearly that everything from 4 to 11 inclusively is not simply something that's nice to do, but what you do do. And from Route 1, 12 on up to Route 1, 15 throughout, there are things that are nice to do. See, this is not one of these things that the preacher will absolutely perish if you don't do these things. Now, that intensive procedure has a great many steps which you could omit or forget about. But certainly, you wouldn't forget about R14 to R111. But you could start getting a foggy memory along about R112, because this step is only a minor step which usually takes place in the preclear. But nevertheless, it's a good thing to do with a preclear. Sometimes you get a preclear who, while exteriorized, still is banked up by facsimiles. He's got facsimileosis. And everything he looks at, you tell him, go out and look at that dog, and you'll see a facsimile of a dog, not a real dog, you know. You tell him to go through the stomach of that goat, and he doesn't appear a bit alarmed. Whereas, as a matter of fact, the first time you tell somebody to sail through the stomach of a goat and he's actually exteriorized, he's liable to be quite alarmed with you. That seems to be a fairly strange place to go. Actually, he's used to being eaten, you know, and being eaten by a goat is quite degrading. And he'll balk somewhat. So we have this person with facsimileosis. It's merely the fact that this person has not yet gotten into a state where he can create or destroy energy. Of course, this whole universe is dead set against either creation or destruction. These two things you mustn't do. Survive is the motto of this universe. Creation, destruction, these definitely are not the mottos of this universe. If you want to believe this more thoroughly, just go around and ask a nuclear physicist sometime. Ask him what he thinks of this new idea of yours. And do you know, usually, long before you have any chance to state the idea, he will have told you just this, which is a real funny one. There isn't anything new. It's all been done before. He's certain of this. This is a big conviction on his part. It's all been done before. Oh, the devil it has. Writers who are all written out, fogged down, and have finally become editors will tell you that there is no such thing as a new idea. One of the first things that they teach in some of those decadent places known as the university, in the creative writing class, they will tell you there are some, I don't know, what is it, 8 jokes? No, that's over in public speaking. 8 basic jokes and no others. They will tell you that there's something like 36 dramatic situations and 55 associations, or maybe that's Heinz products, or is that 57? There's something like this, but there's just exactly a finite number of plots. Well, there was a fellow one time wrote a book called Plotto, the Plot Genie, and he went mad doing it, by the way. But it's all possible combinations based upon these 36 standard situations. I wonder why he went mad. Doesn't seem to me like you'd go mad doing this. Well, he had to assume basically that there were just so many plots, and then just so many combinations of these plots. And having assumed that, he was dead. That's the way you kill a writer. You tell him there's 36 dramatic situations. Actually, there aren't. There aren't any dramatic situations as far as the instructor is concerned. He has lost all sense of drama. The world is dead as far as he's concerned. It's all reduced down to a certain mechanic. Do you mean to tell me that an individual cannot simply invent a dramatic situation? Just whole cloth? Well, you have to run a preclear on that basic two-way communication question. How many problems could you be to yourself? How many problems could you be to yourself? And all of a sudden, he's getting more and more and more and more and more. He runs out entirely at first, you know. He just drains the bank, a how many problems he could be to himself, and then long comm lags, and then he gets more of them, and more of them, more of them. He finally gets up to infinity. What do you suppose a dramatic situation is, but how many problems you could be to yourself or others? Well, how many ways can you bend a piece of copper wire? That's how many vias there would be. How many ways, directions, could you bend how many combined kinds of copper wire? That's one of these nebulous questions, isn't it? Well, you had an infinity of copper wire, an infinity of sizes of copper wire. Now, how many ways could you bend this? And they've had the number of problems, because a problem is always occasioned by via. Anytime you bend that line between cause and effect, you have started a problem. Anytime you go into a relay system of any kind, you have started into problems. Now, how many problems could he be to himself? This is basically a dramatic situation, isn't it? All right, if he believes there's a finite number of dramatic situations, isn't there a finite number of reasons to live? Just like that. He just doesn't have very many reasons to live. He'd have only 36, wouldn't he? Well, I'd blow my brains out if I only thought there were 36 situations by which I could get into trouble in this universe. Now, creation and destruction on the level of ideas, of course, is immediately mirrored by creation to destruction on the level of energy. And then creation and destruction on the level of energy is mirrored in terms of solidity, havingness. What is havingness but too many vias jammed up too tight? That's havingness. You want a picture of havingness? It's too many vias jammed up too tight. And, of course, all havingness is a problem. You want to know what gives the millionaire ulcers? He just has to be surrounded by that many pieces of mass, and he's got that many vias immediately. All right, we take energy, creation to destruction of energy, creation to destruction of matter would be its lowest realm, wouldn't it? Now, I'll go into this very briefly and tightly here, exactly what this step is. R112, by design, is an exteriorized process which would convince the person that he could then generate and unmock energy. See, generate and destroy energy. If he can generate and destroy energy, you see, how many problems could you be to yourself and how many problems could you be to others would generate and destroy dramatic ideas, wouldn't it? That would create and destroy dramatic ideas. Well, we have to get into the field of energy. Your nuclear physicist knows that this universe is here. It'll be here forever. There is no destroying any single particle in the entire universe. The conservation of the energy reigns everywhere, particularly in the police department. And he knows you couldn't do this. That's why he's mad. That's why he's actually crazy enough to go out here and set off atom bombs. He has reached the extremity, the utter extremity, of we just can't have that much mass there. We've got to do something about it. We've got to make nothing out of it. You have people run around trying to make nothing out of big masses by saying, well, it doesn't amount to much, and it isn't important, and it isn't pretty, and so forth. What's happened is they're drawn in toward that mass so far and so deep that it is a matter of great problem to them. See, they're drawn into it, and they're trying to fend off of it by saying it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing. And if they feel they can't get away from it, they just go on a steady running fire of chatter of how it doesn't amount to much. Whether that's criticism or trying to talk it down or invalidate it one way or the other. They only have to invalidate obsessively when they can't unmock it directly. We got that? The way you unmock it directly is by perfect duplication. Duplicate it in its own time, its own space, with its own particles, and believe me, it'll cease to exist. I almost frightened Sutton out of his wits one day. He was sitting there minding his own business, and I all of a sudden said, take a look at the atoms over there in that brick. Now put an attention unit along with each atom that you see in that little section there, and have it go back to and pick up at its inception and make a perfect duplicate of that atom. Have each one of these attention points do that. And he had an empty space right there where he was looking at it. Gone. The only thing that makes this matter stay around is come through too many courses and routes, you see. And it's finally gotten lost from its original creation point. All you'd have to do is locate its original creation point and unmock it, and it would cease to exist right where it is. You would actually have to unmock it twice if you're going to do a complete job of it, because you'd have to unmock the fact that you'd unmocked it. Otherwise, you'd still have a ghost of it around. Got that? So here we have R112 as an entire series of processes which create and destroy energy. You could do it directly or otherwise. And we say R112, this process here may not be the best process there is to do this, but it is a process that does this. It's have pre-clear mock-up generators, power plants, and suns to give him energy on that gradient scale until he's totally convinced that he does not have to receive energy from an outside source. Why does this individual never create energy? Why is he still playing around with facsimiles? Well, he believes he has to have all of his energy from an outside source. He believes he himself cannot create energy, that he has to have it from elsewhere. So this is just a nice route by which you change his consideration with this set of mock-ups up to a point where he says, why, heck, I can make that energy. I'm making that generator, and I'm creating that sun, and so forth. Anyhow, the steps of doing this, the pattern which will go along with it, is the easiest thing in the world. You simply have him mock up generators. And mock up a little tiny generator to give him energy enough to flick his eyelid. You see? And have him mock up something else. Straight generators, or have him mock up food supplies, which would supply him with energy in order to flick his eyelid. Anything you want to do, you see, and then mock up enough to blow him up in the air, finally. You know, power plants and motors and so on. Just have him go on mocking up things to give him energy. He will mock them up more or less on a gradient scale, so you could say the auditing command would be, mock up something that will give you energy in order to act. And you just mock up something else to give you energy, and mock up something else that will furnish you with energy. And you just keep saying this, and he'll all of a sudden fall wise to the fact that he's mocking it all up. You just run it until he does. And at that moment, he will no longer be confounded by all these facsimiles. This is one of the basic problems he has. One of the basic problems he has, anyhow, is that he has set up a problem saying that he himself can't furnish energy to it. Somebody else has to. And that's one of his basic problems. So remedy of problems actually will sometimes turn up that computation. You simply, how many problems could you be to yourself? You finally say, well, I have to have something else mark up all the energy I'm using. And that would be one of the most basic problems he has. If R112 does not bring about the condition of full release of his ideas and attitudes concerning this, and if it doesn't bring about an alteration of consideration so he knows he can mock up energy for his own use, why, you know then you have run into problems. So we would just start back on the basis of how many problems could you be to yourself, or we'd go back to this remedy of pettiness back here. We would simply step back to R111. See, how many problems could you be yourself in having this? Or how many problems can you be in having this? Well, how many problems could he be in doing this? How many problems could he be in being this? Be, have, and do, remember, are the component parts which are opposite space, energy, and mass. See, space, be, do, energy, have, mass. Also, time. Have is time. You don't have any time problems until you have havingness problems. All right, unless it's the problem of not having any time at all. By the way, that's quite a problem. Being a complete space without even a visible anchor point, which is, say, this universe. So R112 auditing command is simply mock up something which will furnish you energy, mock up something else which will furnish you energy, mock up something else which will furnish you energy, mock up something else which will furnish you energy, mock up something else which will furnish you energy, mock up something else which will furnish you energy, just on and on and on until he finally falls wise to the fact that he is creating all the energy that's being used by many. And that is the total step. Now, R112 is, of course, a mock-up process. You can see that as a mock-up process. Therefore, it has some limitation in itself. Actually, process would chase somebody around the universe, such as a grand tour, can be senior to a straight mock-up process. The only reason he is using facsimile, of course, he's afraid to look directly, so he makes a facsimile of something and then looks at the facsimile. Well, that's silly, too. He looked, he had to see the object he was making a facsimile of, didn't he? In order to make a facsimile of, he had to see the object he was making a facsimile of, copy it, then pretend he hadn't seen the object and look at the facsimile. That's Diaz. They'll get a guy in trouble every time.
This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 18th of October, 1954. title of this lecture is Route 1, Step 13. This tape is 15 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Now we have Route 1, 13. Route 1, 13 is, to many auditors and to many pre-clears, one of the gall-dangest, gee-whizzinest things that you ever ran into in your life. It is utterly, utterly phenomenal. We could probably start a university which would do nothing but fool around with R-113. That's typical of so many parts of Dianetics and Scientology. You could just go on and concentrate and specialize on these things forever and aye. R-113, have pre-cleared just genetic entity anchor points. That's an interesting process. Fabulous process. In order to start in with this process, we actually have to go into the actual structure of the body. Now, to tell you about this in 15 minutes is really not difficult. You would think this is quite something. The genetic entity anchor points. What do we call a genetic entity? Genetic entity simply means that entity which is carrying along through time that is making the body through the time stream, through the action of sex and so forth. Sperm, ovum, embryo, infant, man. What is the single or many intelligences which go into the actual structure which eventually results in a grown body? Well, that we call a genetic entity. It isn't a him, it isn't a her. It would simply be the combined intelligences which eventually result in this result. Now, this could or could not, or may not, include the Thetan or awareness-awareness unit. Actually, the awareness-awareness unit probably would not admit his responsibility for making this body from beginning to end anyhow. So the genetic entity might even be the awareness-awareness unit, the Thetan. Might even be. We're not interested in whether it is or isn't. We're interested here in structure. And with the adjustment of anchor points, Dianetics and Scientology went into structure and disbarred all holes. We're perfectly willing to address the field of structure today, which we were not in 1950. And the reason why we are willing to address structure today is because we know something about structure today, and we were unwilling before because we didn't know anything about it. And if medicine and psychiatry and so forth were to present that conservative attitude toward existence, they would be far better off. They're continually invading the field of structure without having one brain cell to knock against another one on the subject. They don't know anything about it, and their courage and adventurousness is something that should be saluted by some of the greater adventurers of history. We are actually today not being adventurous in Dianetics and Scientology, really. We are holding the conservative line. And we're not like medicine and psychiatry, which are wild, incapable, improbable, and so on. If you take that attitude, you fare much better. They test one case and say, we run a series. They test two cases, we run a series. And they are perfectly willing, now get this, they are perfectly willing to treat structure without knowing a single thing about structure. Oddly enough, it took electronics and nuclear physics to scout out this thing called structure. What is structure? It depends primarily upon viewpoint of dimension, the definition of space. Then if we have viewpoint of dimension, what is it that so arduously holds in position the very structure of the body? It would be something then which held in position a certain series of anchor points, isn't that right? And these anchor points would then give the space of the body, and would demonstrate what part of the body was to be dense and what part of the body was not to be dense. And it would be a problem in anchor points, wouldn't it? Because you have a body walking around and it's occupying a certain amount of space, but it has to create that space where every new position goes into. So we're looking at a miracle here. But we're also looking at electronics. Anchor points consist of electronic energy masses. And they are measurable on very, very fine electronic machines. They are measurable. I mean, we're not dealing now with something like a theory. I mean, we can reach out with a magic wand and swap these things.
As a Phaeton, we can go down the street and somebody is tooling along, you know, walking along perfectly good order, and we just take the upper right-hand anchor point and let's move it. And he will walk in a circle. You wonder what on earth's happened to him. He'll start walking like Leon Harrell. We can do this to anybody. Dizziness is just a displacement of these things. That's all. How many are there in the body? Millions. How many principal ones? There are about six big ones. How do you locate them? Well, they vary from the tiniest, tiniest microscopic point of electricity to huge spheres, which look like the gold balls outside of a pawn shop. And these are not visible to the naked eye unless you process somebody in their direction. He begins to go around looking at people's anchor points. And this begins to worry him because he stops seeing bodies and starts seeing anchor points. You very seldom process anybody in this direction. All right, where are these anchor points? At every place the body has mobility, you can depend upon it that there are small or large anchor points. Those places which we call, in advanced procedures and axioms, the sub-brains of the body. Remember advanced procedures and axioms? Control centers, epicenters, remember all that? We're talking about anchor points. Now here at the bend of the elbow is an anchor point. Here at the bend of the wrist is an anchor point. Here at the ball of the shoulder is an anchor point. Now are they the bone? No, they are not. They're an electronic deposit which permits the bend of that much space. Well, the stuff that's hanging in, visible to the naked eye, is only there as long as those anchor points are in position. And if you were to suddenly knock out of existence all the anchor points in an arm, you would create either a complete immobility of the arm, or the arm itself would vanish. Now let's look this over as nothing esoteric. We're dealing with something like hooking up circuits and putting meters on and resistors and things like that. Then, if somebody had a sprain at his elbow, the first thing we would suspect would be that the space of the elbow had been disarranged. We would not suspect there was something wrong with the bones and ligaments of the elbow. It would be a mistake for you as an auditor, really, to suppose that something was wrong with the bones and ligaments and meat of the elbow simply because an elbow was sprained or broken. Now we've invaded the field of the medical doctor, and we've many times said the medical doctor should be permitted to practice and structure and set bones and so forth. Well, sure, he should. But not being an electronics man, he has no business having no concept of the actual structure of energy, such as you have, viewpoint of dimension, anchor points, and so forth, having no idea of basic electronics. He has no darn business, really, shortening or lengthening bones or trying to do something to disarrange the structure of the body. It's perfectly all right as long as he tries to put back into existence the body as it was meant to be. But now, if he starts to get experimental, knowing nothing about electronics, boy, is he out of his field. The only way you could lengthen an arm would be really by rearranging the anchor points which demarked the distance and length of the arm. And what do you know? By processing, you ordinarily, routinely do this. By doing what? We know about black energy masses, right? And this fellow's arm is very short. Well, let's say he's hung up in birth. Here he is, hung up in birth, and he's tacking along around this huge energy mass. Well, he's got a foreshortened arm. We audit him out of birth. We audit him out of that energy mass, and for the first time, the anchor point can snap into its proper position. And so his arm can grow. Up to that time, a mass of anchor points, wrong anchor points, the facsimiles of birth and so forth, were being paid attention to by the arm. In other words, that was what was making the space of that arm, not the designed anchor points. You audit out birth, that energy goes by the board. The original anchor points can then carry on their process of growth and extension according to their plans, orders, and dictates. You follow me? So therefore, a facsimile, being a mass of energy, can attract out of position these anchor points. There is magnetic interrelationship between the facsimile and the anchor points of the body. So when this fellow has a sprained elbow, the first thing you would think of with regard to the sprained elbow is that the anchor point is out of position. Now, if he were exteriorizing, you've done all the root one drills to bring him right on up to a line where he could see energy, mock things up, real sharp, real clever, you know, in good shape. All you'd have to do is tell him, take a look at the elbow. Do you find any kind of a ball or anything there in the elbow? He'd say, yes, there's a little black ball. You say, mock up a whole bunch of black balls. He would keep stuffing them into the elbow. All of a sudden, he will say, you know, the little ball has turned gold. Why was it black? That was because the energy was being drained out of it by some other anchor point. You remedied the havingness of that particular anchor point. It got gold. You say, all right, now put it into position. And he would try, and it wouldn't go in position. You'd say, well, you know what his proper position is. They do, by the way. That's the mysterious thing. The Thetan knows where the proper positions are. You say, mock up a gold ball in the proper position and throw it away, and another one and throw it away, and another one, throw it away. You've got an energy suction going where that anchor point belongs. It's being repelled out of its proper position. You remedy the havingness of the position. First, remedy the havingness of energy in the area, then remedy the havingness of position of the anchor point, and then have him shove the body's anchor point back into the proper position, quick. No sprain, no break. It's fabulous. It's what makes the body structure exist. Now, very often you find an anchor point just shot to pieces, completely shattered. This fellow is having an awful lot of trouble with the right side of his body. We find out this wing anchor point, which is way out here in front of him and so forth, is shattered. Have him collect the pieces. They're still around. Have him mock up the havingness of the area. Have him discharge out of it. In other words, the facsimiles that are being held onto in the area simply by remedying the havingness. Have him pour black balls, gold balls, whatever you want, into the area where that shattered anchor point is. He will tell you. You say, look around. Do you see any black balls, any gold balls, anything like that? Yes, I do. Well, there's one lying there in pieces. You say, okay, remedy the havingness of the area it belongs in. Put the pieces together. The position it should be in, push it into place. It'll go click, and all of a sudden this person's physical imbalance will vanish. Now, where are these anchor points? There's a whole gold sheen of them underneath each eye. People who have dark hollows under their eyes ordinarily have had these anchor points badly shattered and have never gone on and remedied the havingness of the area and put them all into place again. There are anchor points, as I said, at each bend. At each point in the body where you have an arterial pass and so forth, you generally have some anchor points sitting around there, demarking the area where it should be there. And the eyes themselves, there's one in each corner of the eye, the principal anchor points. Once in a while you process somebody, you get piercing pains in each corner of each eye. And, you won't like that. What you've done is simply suck the energy out of the existing anchor point in the area, you see, temporarily, and it hurt. Now, we sometimes see a misalignment of structure or a loss of beauty on a face or a body. It always has something to do with anchor points. Now, you can get a body into a position, no return. It has been banged around so much, it's been in so many accidents, it's been shocked so often, and so on, that all a Thetan can do is simply string these anchor points together as good as he can and keep them in position. Why? Because the body does not operate on the anchor point mocked up in the position by the Thetan. The body only operates on its own anchor points. A Thetan cannot, for some reason or other, come along and put an anchor point in the position. I don't lay this down as a rule that can't be thrown aside, but so far all experiments have demonstrated that this is the rule. The body has to have its own anchor points to have its own space. And when the Thetan comes along and slides in a mock-up anchor point in position for the body's anchor point, he may be very happy about it. It may be a much brighter anchor point, but it will give the person aches, pains, and so on. I've had somebody adjust all the anchor points in his head and had him get piercing headaches and find out, what were you doing? And, well, my anchor points, you see, are much brighter than the body's anchor points, and so I just left them in position. And I've had him go through then the head and pick out all those anchor points which he himself put in and patch up the body's anchor points any old way he could and shove them back into position. And the fellow is suddenly rid of his headache again. In other words, as you run this process, there is one bug, that is, the Thetan mustn't put in anchor points of his own. He can mock up anchor points in the position to remedy the havingness, but when he finally puts the structure back again, make sure he uses the body's own anchor points. Got that? What is this pattern? It is a tremendously complex pattern of space. And that's what it is. It makes a man look something like a tinker toy, all put together on rods and gold balls. But that is the true structure of the body, and the structure of the body which can be changed easily by the auditor. Exteriorizes somebody, and then after he's done all the rest of the root ones right up to this point of remedying these anchor points, he has this person adjust the anchor points of the body. How does he do it? I have already told you, and it's given to you in the auditor's handbook.